Hello and welcome. You're tuned to Finding Truth Matters with Dr. Andrew Corbett. Thank you for joining us.
And I'm going to point out to you that Jesus Christ is King, and David was reflecting King Jesus' aspiration for his people to carry out his royal mission.
The Book of Psalms in the Old Testament of the Bible, all 150 chapters, are a treasure trove of insights, encouragements, laments, prayers and victorious declarations. Written in poetic style, there is so much we can learn about the character of God from its pages that inspires and encourages our relationship with Him. Tonight, Dr. Corbett continues with the theme of knowing God better with a mini-series on knowing God through the Psalms. To challenge your thinking, let's join Dr. Corbett now.
I'm going to pray and I'm going to ask God to speak to us. But not just to speak to us. I want to pray that you actually hear God. Because there's a difference, right? Every wife knows this. You can say something to someone and it doesn't mean they've heard. No one's prepared to go, I know what you mean. I'm married to him. So now I'm going to pray. Pray with me. Father, may this not just be a sermon, may this not just be another part of our service, but God, may this be something where you speak and not only do we hear, but we heed. God, I pray that you would help me to hide behind your word, that Father, we would hear your voice. And that in hearing your voice, we would leave this place saying, I was glad that I came to the house of the Lord. And Father, I pray today that there would be hurts that are healed, that there would be wounds that people have afflicted people with words that would be cancelled today. That there would be imaginations, there would be things that have come into people's lives like a weed choking their soul that would be weeded out of their lives today. I pray in Jesus' name, and everyone who agrees says, Amen, which is what that word means. It means I agree. We are going through the Psalms, and this is the last in that series, and then next week we will continue. This year is really about knowing God, and it's really been brought home to me just a couple of weeks ago was Easter. And here we have, I'm not sure if I mentioned this to you, but Richard Dawkins. Did I mention Richard Dawkins about he's the guy who has spent millions of dollars advertising on buses saying things like this, there is no God, so stop worrying. I tell you what, if there is no God, I'm beginning to worry. You understand? Like, if there's no God, this world has no hope. But he would spend millions of dollars, and I was in America, I think we're in Washington, D.C., and I saw a bus go past, there is no God, stop worrying. I'm thinking, you fool, literally, Psalm 14, verse 1, you fool for advertising and wasting that money on a bus, telling people a lie. And yet, a few weeks ago, leading up to Easter Sunday, which happened to coincide with Ramadan, the end of Ramadan, Richard Dawkins said, we as a British people, this is what he said, you can see the clip where he was interviewed on a British TV show, where he said, we as a British people should not be endorsing and celebrating Ramadan. I agree with that, but he said, because we're a Christian country, says the world's leading atheist. And the journalist was obviously stunned as well, like you were just then. And she said, what do you mean we're a Christian country? Oh, I love the quaint parish churches. I love at Christmas time we get to sing Christmas carols. I actually love the hymns of the church. And then he said this, oh, I don't believe a thing Christianity says, but I think it would be a real shame if we ceased to be a Christian nation. And she said, how do you, as the world's most famous atheist, put that together. He says, oh, I'm a cultural Christian. I'm a cultural Christian. I believe in the values. I believe our laws are grounded on Christianity, and I agree with him. They are. Absolutely, he's right. We have human rights. Where do you think that came from? It certainly didn't come from Islam. Human rights is foundationally a Christian concept, that every person is created in the image of God. Every person has equal dignity. You could come in here with no arm and still have dignity. You could come in here with no arm on that side, still have dignity. You could come in here with no legs. You'd struggle to get in, but you could come in and you'd still have, and I'm not trying to be silly, you would have the full rights of a human being with full dignity. Do we understand that? Where do you think that came from? Because it didn't come from Soviet Russia. It doesn't come from Greenland, where they say if your child is born, is diagnosed in utero with Down syndrome, by law you must abort that child. Where does Richard Dawkins think Christian values come from? I'm going to shock you. They come from Christianity. So my concern is that this thing called cultural Christianity, another word for that is nominal Christianity. Nominal. Nominal means in name. That's what nominal means. It means a name. You can name yourself a Christian. You could be a nominal Christian. You could know just enough of the Bible to pass, but still not know God. And this is my deepest concern, that there will be people in this church who think Christianity is, oh yeah, oh, I know what that is. I just go through the motions. I just come to church. I loved what Rika said this morning. I loved it. That when we come into this house of God, we sing the words. Did you notice the words we were singing this morning? They are profound words. And yet, for some, it's just a ditty, a tune, a song, but it's not for me, and I hope it's not for you. And so I really, as I come up the home stretch now, I want us to be a church that really knows God. And quite frankly, I don't want to get to heaven and not ultimately, eventually, see you all there. So this is knowing God through the Psalms. And all this year, I want to be dealing with how do we know God? How do we know God? And I was talking with someone before the service, and before the service, it was about the Psalms. And this is my second message that you've heard. This is actually my seventh message that I'll be preaching through the Psalms, and because the rest is on podcast and goes to radio. But I thought we could just keep going through the Psalms because they're so rich in how people came to know God and encourage others to come to know God. We're going to have a look at Psalm 10 in a moment. So if you've got a Bible, you could open that to Psalm 10, and I'll just warn you, Psalm 10 begins in Psalm 9. And you might think that's odd, but I'll explain that in a moment. And what we're going to see is David, with several of these psalms that occur from in what we call the first of the five books of Psalms. This is in the first of the five books of Psalms. In the first book, a lot of these psalms were written by David before he was coronated king. So if you understand the history of King David, he was first made king of Judah and Benjamin, the two southern tribes. Then, 7 years later, he was made king of all 12 tribes. So some of these psalms were written before, definitely before, he was coronated king of all 12 tribes. And this is what we're hopefully going to see in this psalm, is that you have David's aspiration for becoming king. He's going to describe what he sees as God's appointment for him as a king. And I'm going to point out to you that Jesus Christ is king. And David was reflecting King Jesus' aspiration for his people to carry out his royal mission. I'm going to say to you that in this psalm, that royal, that kingly mission that each of us now bear as a child of God reveals to us the most unreached people group in the world. And these people, these unreached people, largely unreached people groups, one group that constitutes them, are in every neighborhood around the world. Every neighborhood. And I hope today to stir men and women to realize that when they go into town, when they do their shopping, when they go to work, these unreached people are everywhere. And I want you to see the heart of God, because he says this throughout the Bible over and over and over, and I dare say many of us have missed it. And I want us as a church to take this very seriously, because there are literally, literally in this city, thousands, if not tens of thousands of people in this category of unreached people. You know, our government's talking about building a bigger prison. 85% of the people in Risdon are part of this unreached people group. So I want us to really hear the point of this psalm, Psalm 10, because these unreached people do not think God cares. They do not think God is anywhere near to them. He's not accessible to them. And I want to say it loud and clear, know that God is near. Because this is Psalm 10. Know that God is near, even when everyone tells you he's not. He is. And we as God's people reflect this. And we are called to reflect this because we are ambassadors, royal ambassadors of the King. Psalm 10 is actually an artificial psalm. It's an artificial psalm because, as I said, it was one psalm starting at Psalm 9. And we know that, and here's how we know that, because if we were to read this in Hebrew, we would see the Hebrew alphabet. We would see in Psalm 9 verse 1 that it begins with the Hebrew letter Aleph, the first letter of the Hebrew alphabet. We would see in verse 3 of Psalm 9, it starts with Bet, the second letter of the Hebrew alphabet. If we were to see in verse 5, Gimel, the third letter of the Hebrew alphabet, we would see in verse 9, Vav. We would see in verse 11, Zayin. We would see in verse 13, Chet. The psalm begins with these letters. In other words, it's going through the Hebrew alphabet, and that Hebrew alphabet does not stop until the end of Psalm 10 verse 18. The other clue that we get that this was one psalm is that the expression which I've spoken to you about, Selah, which means it's a musical pause. And the best we can do is to think, maybe this is where we should pause and consider what we've just read. And that never occurs at the end of a psalm. It's always mid-psalm. And if you have a look at where the Selah is in Psalm 9 and 10, it's at the end of Psalm 9, and therefore that tells us this is the middle of one psalm. The significance of this is that all of this is one expression of King David. In Psalm 10, we're going to see him recapitulate, in other words, restate some of the things he's already mentioned in Psalm 9. We're going to see David offer some questions. And I'm saying to you, this unreached people group have questions that they feel are unanswered. And here's David asking questions. Then we're going to see David offer a prayer. Then we're going to see David express his confidence in God. Then we're going to see David finish with worship as he reflects on his impending role as the King of Israel, but he reflects on the kingship of God. So with that in mind, we start verse 1, why? Here's the question. Why, O Lord, do you stand far away? Why do you hide yourself in times of trouble? It's quite remarkable that even in adversity, and this is David in adversity, that even the most godly people in these times can feel abandoned by God. And I'm going to shock you and say, if you have not experienced that, maybe you're not close enough to God yet, which might sound odd considering what verse 1 of Psalm 10 says. But I suspect that God does this, and we get a clue that God does this because it says that when King Hezekiah was king, God removed himself to test him. Because what if God isn't giving you a sense of his nearness? What if you aren't hearing from God? Do you still love him? Do you still serve him? Do you still obey him? Or like Peter, do you throw your hands in there and go, oh, it's over, let's go fishing? Which tells me that fishing is evil. So even in adversity, the godly can feel abandoned and even overwhelmed. We're going to see, if we went through the Psalms, we would see those moments of anxiety, and we had the others shared just before our Anzac service with Nigel sharing on Psalm 46, this sense of, where are you, God? Though everything shakes, though everything quakes, be still and know that I am God, even when it doesn't feel like it. David in this psalm is going to compound this feeling, because not only does he at times feel, where are you, God? But then to make matters worse, this sense of despair is compounded by those who are scoffers, who ridicule his faith in God. When scoffers ridicule the faith of the godly, it tells me, firstly, if this is something that we as believers really struggle with, it may mean that God is wanting it to show us an incredibly valuable lesson, and that is this: he's not your genie in the bottle, he's your father. And I guarantee you, after the service, if you are in any doubt, if you go up to any father in this place, And you ask them, whenever your child asks for something, do you automatically give it to them? Yeah, we already have our research done. No, because it may not be good for them. It may not be the right time, and so on and so on. We've got all these reasons. And I wonder if it's the same. In fact, I'm pretty sure it's the same with God. And many of us will get to, you know, the autumn of our lives, we'll look back on some of the prayers that we've prayed, and rather than be angry with God for not answering them, we'll probably drop to our knees and thank God that he didn't answer them. I'm telling you, there are young men and young women in this building now who are probably praying for, oh, he'll do or she'll do as a bride or husband. And in years to come, when God hasn't answered that prayer, you'll probably drop to both knees and thank God that he didn't answer that prayer. But when you're in that place and scoffers ridicule you, this is what David experienced in arrogance. Verse 2, the wicked hotly pursue the poor. Let them be caught in the schemes that they have devised. For the wicked boasts of the desires of his soul. And the one greedy for gain curses and renounces the Lord. In the pride of his face, the wicked does not seek him, God. All his thoughts are, there is no God. Psalm 14, verse 1. So here's the question. When things aren't going well, would you describe your life as blessed? So here's the question. If you would or you wouldn't, how do you define a blessed life? What do you consider to be a blessed life? I wonder if, we were more thankful for more things that we would feel more grateful to God in those times when it doesn't feel like he's near or cares. So here we have David talking about those people who are ridiculing him, scoffing at him, mocking him. His ways prosper at all times. This is the wicked. Your judgments are on high, out of his sight. As for all his foes, he puffs at them. Wave of the hand. He says in his heart, I shall not be moved throughout all generations. I shall not meet adversity. Unlike you, Christian, loser, Christian, wasting your time going to church, wasting your time praying, giving money to the church, you loser, Christian, you. You could hear it. And here's David putting it into the language of his day. His mouth is filled with cursing and deceit and oppression. Under his tongue are mischief and iniquity. And we are building to something in this psalm, because David is describing the wicked, and he's saying these things are exactly not what God is about, and it's not what I should be about either. He sits in ambush in the villages, in hiding places. He murders the innocent. His eyes stealthily watch for the helpless. See, this is David aspiring to be a king like the King of Kings. He lurks in ambush like a lion in his pride, in his thicket. He lurks that he may seize the poor. He seizes the poor when he draws him into his net. And so here we have we have David describing the wicked. Did you notice what he's doing when he describes the wicked? It's how they treat people. It's their attitude and how they treat people. Notice that he lurks in ambush like a lion in his thicket. These traits of wickedness are devilish. I mean, literally devilish. Because in 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 8, Peter writes, be sober-minded, be watchful. Your adversary, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion, seeking someone to devour. I wonder if Peter had Psalm 10, verse 9 on his mind. The helpless are crushed, sink down, and fall by his might. He says in his heart, God has forgotten. He's hidden his face. He will never see what I'm doing to the poor, what I'm doing to the helpless, what I'm doing to these people who can't fight me back. And here comes David's prayer. Arise, O Lord, O God, lift up your hand, forget not the afflicted. Why could David pray that? Because he knew God cared. He knew it. And he does. The traits of this wicked person are a reflection of the one to whom they have bowed. That is, the wicked have bowed to Satan. They do Satan's bidding, the devil's bidding, and now their life reflects him. Sociopathic toward people. Sociopathic, pathic means sickness. Socially sick. They don't care for people. Because Satan does not care for people. He just doesn't. The traits of the wicked are that reflection of the one they've bowed down to, the devil. Jesus described the work of the devil and those that follow him in John chapter 8, verse 44, where he says, you are of your father, the devil, and your will is to do your father's desires. He was a murderer, like Psalm 10, verse 9, from the beginning and does not stand in the truth because there is no truth in him. When he lies, he speaks out of his own character. He is a liar and the father of lies. So think about this. Here's David writing this. He's not yet king. He knows he's going to be king. The prophet Samuel's anointed him to be king. And at the moment, there is a king, King Saul, who is not doing what a king should do. He doesn't care about people. He's motivating all this oppression and affliction and murder of the helpless. And if you're David and you're hiding in a cave, as we saw earlier in the earlier Psalms, and you know you can't do anything about it just yet, what would that drive you to emotionally? And I'm suggesting it would probably drive you to tears. And this is a part of what I want you to know, that David is now praying this to God, and I'm suggesting to you, because I know David, I've read his Psalms, and I see he did this a lot. He cries. Not just cries out, he weeps and cries. And there's something very, very potent when a man stands, hands lifted up, and prays and cries tears of pain. And I'm going to tell you, we as the church have a mandate from Christ to enter into his pain for this hurting world. The psalmist's tearful potency, which means power when praying while weeping, is seen in Psalm 6 verses 8 and 9. Depart from me, all you workers of evil. This is David. Just a few psalms before. The Lord has heard the sound of my weeping. The Lord has heard my plea. The Lord accepts my prayer. I know a man is a man of strength and courage when I see him cry. And that is exactly the opposite of what the world says. I heard the remarkable story of a young man got caught up in a horrible lifestyle. And it's in the book by Nancy Piercy's latest book. And Nancy Piercy is a godly lady, and she is a genius. If you want to be blessed, read her latest book. Nancy Piercy tells in this book that she's a professor in Texas, and she says one of her students, this is his story, he got caught up with the wrong crowd, he was doing drugs, he was doing crime, he was doing all kinds of things, and then he was arrested, charged, convicted, and sent to prison. He became a hardened criminal. And in prison, he was there with the roughest of the roughest of people. And as he was there, his parents, godly mum and dad, came to the prison to visit him. And in this prison, they allowed them to go into what's called a pod, where his parents could meet with their son. And as they shared with him the humiliation, the emotional breaking that he had inflicted on them by what he had done. When the time was up, they left, they had to leave. The guards came and opened the pod doors, which looked out into the section where all the other prisoners were, in the sort of tables and where they probably dined, I suppose. And this man couldn't leave. He sat up against the end of the table, and he uncontrollably wept. He wept and wept and wept, because for the first time in his life, he realized how he had hurt his mum and dad. He bawled uncontrollably. He didn't want to go out into the dining area because he didn't want anyone else to see him crying. One prisoner saw him and came up to him and said, "Real men cry, brother." And from that he realized everyone in that prison was broken. David cried tears of compassion, tears of hurt and pain, because he cared. He cared for people. He cared for the afflicted. He was a real man. He cared. Here he is weeping and weeping and weeping, and there is something about that, because real men do cry. Jesus stood at the tomb of Lazarus. It's the shortest verse in the Bible. John 11:35. What does it say? Jesus wept. He wept, publicly wept. Not the first time. The only time John tells us about. Psalm 56 verse 8, again a psalm of David. You've kept count of my tossings. You put my tears in your bottle, which is a metaphor for you've heard my prayers. Are they not in your book? Which scholars would say there is a book of prayer described as tears. Arise. O Lord, O God, lift up your hand, forget not the afflicted. Why does the wicked renounce God and say in his heart, you will not call to account? God doesn't care. God doesn't even see what I'm doing. You silly Christians, you. But you do see. For you note mischief and vexation, that you may take it into your hands. To you, the helpless commits himself. You have seen the helper. Sorry, you have been the helper of the fatherless. You have been the helper of the fatherless. And then David, in verse 15, says, break the arm of the wicked and evildoer. Call his wickedness to account till you find none. Can you hear the anger that David has toward those who are hurting people who can't defend themselves, women and children, and the fatherless? And now David worships the one who cares the most for the fatherless, because he is the Father. And he says this, the Lord is King forever and ever. The nations perish from his hand. O Lord, you hear the desire of the afflicted. You will strengthen their heart. You will incline your ear to do justice, to do justice to the fatherless and the oppressed. This is Hebrew parallelism. In other words, you say something, and just in case people don't get it, you say it again with different words. The fatherless are the oppressed. The fatherless are the oppressed. And God is a God who has a special heart for the fatherless, and it is all through the Bible. James, true religion is this, to care for widows and orphans. That means those orphans are what? Fatherless. Because there's a widow and there's an orphan. This is all through the Bible. Amazingly, in John chapter 8, Jesus is accused of being fatherless. Pretty low comment from the scribes and Pharisees. Maybe they were thinking because Joseph is dead, but there was another follow-up comment to that where they said to Jesus, at least we know who our father is. Because they knew that Joseph was not his father, but who was? Matthew chapter 1 tells us it was God himself. So that the man who is of the earth may strike terror no more. There are people out here in our town, in our city, in our valley, who want to take advantage of the fatherless, and the fatherless are the most unreached people group in the world. You know, the Bible does not talk about parenting. It talks about fathering and mothering, and children need both. Did you know that God is described as having mother-like traits from whom every mother can learn from God about how to be a better mother? Did you know that the Bible describes God as Father, and every man can learn how to be a father by looking at how God himself fathers? The most unreached people group in our society are those children who are the children of single mothers. They are fatherless. And I hope in years to come this church becomes a church full of men who will take such a mission field under their arms and care for them and be a father to the fatherless, a role model to young men who have no father. What do we learn from Psalm 10? I hope we learn this. Even in times of trouble and affliction, God is near the righteous. He's near the godly. You may not think so, but he is. You may think that blessing means you're prospering and life is easy and everything's going well. Can I tell you, that may not necessarily be blessing. Blessing is this: anything that brings you closer to God. And if your wealth is stopping you from doing that, may God take your wealth from you. And everyone said, oh dear. Prosperity and ease are not necessarily indications of God's blessing, and neither is, let me talk to other pastors who look down on me, neither is the size of your church. I said to someone, heartfelt, I said this morning to someone, this is a great church. I love this church. This is our family. The person on your left is your brother or your sister. And for young men, I hope that they recognize that there are men here that they can look up to. What else do we see in Psalm 10? That our past experience of God's faithfulness, which is what David had. Remember, he's gone out and killed a giant. He's already told us he's gone out and killed lions and bears who had young lambs in their teeth. And he's rescued the young lambs because he said, this is what God does for me. His past experience of God's faithfulness gave him confidence that God would hear his prayers, and we should have confidence that God will hear our prayers because he's been faithful to us as well. And then, what do we see? You see, that section there, the Lord is king forever. Nations perish from his land. O Lord, you hear the desire of the afflicted. You will strengthen their heart. You will incline your ear to do justice to the fatherless and the oppressed, so that the man who is of the earth may strike terror no more. That's worship. And can I tell you, that's worship that we should hear. And we should not only hear it, we should go, Jesus Christ is king. His kingship needs to be felt in this community. And we might think, oh, the only reason we care for people is so that we can get them saved so they can go to heaven. How about this? How about we just care for people? Did you hear what I'm saying? How about we just care? How about we see young men and not as, oh, there should be tougher criminal penalties. Oh, I don't think so. Because we're doing that, and how's that going for us? Oh, we just build bigger prisons and punish them more. And how's that going for us? How about we take some of these young men under our arms, bring them around our dinner table, and show them how to hold a knife and a fork? And you might think, oh, don't be ridiculous. No, we've had a family around our dinner table, and the young men, like young two brothers, looked at the knife and fork and said, what are these? You might think that's ridiculous. It's not ridiculous. Some of the most practical life skills that young men don't have, it's because no one's ever shown them. Do you realize there was a dad whose wife died as she was giving birth, and he had to parent, father, his daughter, and he thought, how on earth do I do this? And then he began to see, because now he was aware of it, that there were lots of young people who had no fathers. So he started a YouTube site called Dad, How Do I? You can fill in the sentence, right? Dad, how do I change a tire? He's now got something like 12 million subscribers, and the comments go like this: I never had a dad. You're my dad. Thank you for showing me how to change a tire, how to make my bed, how to fill in the list. And you think, well, everyone knows that. No, they don't. And so if we have care and compassion for the fatherless, we will reflect the heart of God. And here's David saying, one day when I'm king, this is what I'm going to do. And you know what? There was an orphan that David brought to his banqueting table, the royal banqueting table. Anyone know his name? Bible trivia question. Mephibosheth. Thank you, whoever said that. Try spelling that in a spelling bee. Mephibosheth was Jonathan's son. Jonathan was killed, and David sought this orphan out, the fatherless out. Mephibosheth had been dropped as a young boy, and his legs were broken, and they were never reset, and so he could not walk. And so David had this young man who was a cripple brought to his royal table and given full honor as royalty. And I think we need to have young men who come in here with tattoos and earrings where earrings were never designed by God to go, and loved and made to feel like you're a brother, you're a part of the family.
If you'd like to listen again or you've missed a program, you'll find an archive of all previous episodes on our website, findingtruthmatters.org. Just head to the Knowing God Through the Psalms playlist. You can also find the podcast by subscribing to Finding Truth Matters on iTunes, Spotify, or SoundCloud. Amidst the pages of the Psalms, we often hear a reflection of our own heart cry, and so we can take great encouragement for our own relationship with God as we see God's character revealed. More of Finding Truth Matters next week. Dr. Corbett is pastor of Lagana Christian Church and president of ICI Theological College Australia. Thank you for joining us. We look forward to meeting with you again at the same time next week for another Finding Truth Matters.